So tonight is our final look at this Sermon on the Mount that Jesus preaches in Matthew chapter 5. If you want to have it open, page 809 in the church Bibles. So we've been essentially through this whole series been looking at what is a Christian according to Jesus. And we've seen that he's gone very deep into our humanity in his description. My attitudes, my heart desires, and so on. The way I relate to people around me, it's been a full picture. But what we saw last time is the picture was not complete of the Christian until verse 10 to 12, where it's a sort of climax. If you look at the length of the verses, 10 to 12, it's triple the size of the others. So Jesus spends three times here as to where he spends the others. So he really wants us to focus in on this last bit. It's like a climax, you could say. What's the climax then? What is a Christian? What should we know? Persecuted. That's what we need to know. The journey of a Christian will somehow lead here. Maybe in different ways for many different people, but there will be something of this in the Christian's life. And we looked at what that was. Jesus in verse 11 describes it in three different ways: revile, persecute, and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely. We looked at that last time. In short, it can be physical, it can be emotional, it can even be a spiritual sort of attack. You're attacked in all parts of your life, from every direction, because the world is against the Christian in many ways. So this could be your family member. This could be your husband or wife. This could be your work colleague. This could be your friend. It's a scary thought. It's hard. And it's hard enough suffering in life generally, isn't it? It's hard enough to have diseases, the general sufferings of life. This is on another level because it's suffering and hatred and rejection rolled into one. It's a dark place, verse 10 to 12, a very dark place. And the scary thought, the sobering thought is, do you see that Jesus says you suddenly in verse 11? There's a sudden shift. He's been saying, blessed are those, blessed are those. He's describing a group of people. Then he suddenly says, you. Verse 11. He suddenly makes it personal here. And this is the scary thought. For these disciples listening then, it actually happens. If you look at church history, I'm just going to give one example. There's disciples, according to church history, suffered in many ways. Peter, crucified upside down. Jesus' words for his disciples came true. And then you look beyond these disciples into the rest of the New Testament, you see Stephen, the first martyr. It didn't take long. He preached a sermon, he's stoned. Stephen. Paul, Apostle Paul, the amount of suffering he endured. Read most of the New Testament, you'll find that. Then you look further and you see Christians, we said this last time, human torches in an emperor's garden. We see Christians thrown to lions. We see them burnt at the stake. In this country, for example. And then it's carried on through to today, where arguably in the last century, more Christians have suffered than all the others combined. A shocking stat. And we gave one example last time, which was probably quite shocking to hear. A man called Asif, or that's his name given to him, was drowned by his father when he found out he had become a Christian. His dad drowned him in a swimming pool. Sobering stuff. We're entering real dark territory as we look at this. And then there's a sense it does reach us too. So there's a danger here that we're removed and that's happening over there. That's real persecution. And then we're over here, we're not experiencing it at all. That's not true because Jesus says revile, doesn't he? He says utter all kinds of evil. That's going on here. That's going on in the workplace. Maybe you faced it yourself. You've been laughed at, mocked for being a Christian. So it does relate to us, and it could relate to us even more. That's why I think it's important to look at this topic. Who knows where things will be in 10 years, the way things are going in this society? It could be a reality that there's going to be imprisonment for the faith. It's not too hard to imagine. So it's really important to look at this topic. And the point we made last time was it makes sense when you see the one the Christian follows, Jesus Christ, the only righteous one who only loved and did good and healed the sick and was a friend of sinners, what did the world do with him? They pinned him to a cross. Shocking. How much more then his servants must expect something of that. It was the reality of persecution. That's what we looked at last time. Now, that all leads to an obvious question which we must ask tonight. In light of that, if this is true, who would want to be a Christian? Why should you be a Christian? You come every week and hear sermons that tell you to be a Christian. Why should you? If this is where it leads, why should you want to be a Christian? Now, that relates to all of us here. Maybe tonight you're not a Christian here and you're not convinced at all, and you haven't left the world and followed Jesus. But if this is true, why should you? Why should you sign up to this? Christians here, some of you have genuinely gone through hard things for Jesus. You've had to give up. Maybe some of your family members hate you right now. Why should you keep going with this? It's so hard. And others here, let's be honest, as Christians, we have shielded ourselves from these verses. We can be very clever and go through the Christian life and avoid any sort of persecution. It's easy. You either don't say you're a Christian or you avoid saying anything that might offend. It's easy. So why should we step out and walk this road that Jesus has been drawing, the Beatitude Road? Why should we step out and live a radical, costly life for Jesus? Why? Why should I be a peacemaker, like we looked at before, that shares the gospel and causes offense as I do it? Why should I be someone who's pure in heart and take the stand in the workplace, knowing what response I'm going to get to something? Why should I go on the mission field, if any of you feel called to that? Why should I go into the ministry if it likely means this? That's the question we're dealing with tonight. Is it worth it being a Christian? And it's, again, something particularly important in our climate today. Now, I want you to notice something as we ask this question. Verse 10 to 12, again, is talking about a Christian who is willing to face persecution. If you look at that word persecuted in verse 10, apparently in the Greek, it's such a word that is actually could be translated willing to be persecuted. It's a passive participle, they call it. Now, I sound very clever saying that, but it could be translated willing. They were willing to. They chose this. That's the point. Why? Let's try and do an illustration and try and picture what this is saying. Imagine a boy at school. Let's call him Jimmy. When I was thinking of a name, Jimmy came to me for some reason. So there's a boy called Jimmy, and he gets bullied horribly at school. They beat him up daily. They steal from him. Whatever he brings in, they take. His jacket, his lunch, whatever. They spread lies about him in the school. His life is an absolute misery. Why? Why are they bullying him? All because of the college that he's going to next. Sounds strange, but just stick with the story. That's why he's getting bullied. Everyone at this school hates that college. They want nothing to do with it, but he's going there. Now, he could have pretended he's not going there, firstly. He could have cancelled going there because his current life is an absolute mess because of it. But he does the opposite. He wears a badge of the future college. He goes around the school telling other people they need to go to this college too. And he gets beat up and beat up and beat up. And he goes home every day leaping for joy that he's been beaten up again. That is what is being described here. That is the parallel of the disciples here. These disciples from this moment could have rejected following Christ after what they heard. They could have said, right, I'll follow him, but I'll avoid any sort of persecution. But they go on and they preach him, inviting persecution. Do you see the question this is bringing to us? Are we missing something? If you're sitting there tonight and asking, why should I be a Christian if it means this? You're missing something that they saw. That's the point. We need to see what the disciples saw. We need to see what the Christian sees and why they're willing to go through these kind of things. There must be a reason. why Jimmy is willing to be beaten up to go to this college, right? That's the point. So we need to look again at these Beatitudes one more time to try and find the answer to this, because I do believe this is the point of the Beatitudes. They're not, they are supposed to cause us to search and say, am I really a Christian? Am I this? There is that. But did you notice at the start of every verse is blessed? Jesus wants to drive the point home to you that the Christian is the only happy person in this world. And that leads us to the first point. The first thing we're going to see about the Christian tonight is they are happy. Happy. Let's read verse 10 to 12 again. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Do you see the happiness there in those verses? Firstly, that word blessed. We described what this is already. Blessed could be described as a deep inner happiness that isn't produced by the world and cannot be affected by the world. So it's a special happiness that you have that stays and remains with you. And it's different to the world around you and what others are experiencing. Jesus has been saying all the way through, the Christian has it, the Christian has it, the Christian has it. But look, it remains in verse 10 to 12. That's the shock. You could describe verse 10 to 12 as the darkest place. The world has rejected you, your family, all the things that Christians are suffering today. And yet that happiness has remained. More, it's grown. The persecutor tried to steal it. But in fact, they've made the happiness grow in the Christian. Did you notice that? There's two blessed, verse 10 and 11. Double blessed. And Jesus says, rejoice and be glad. Do you know how those words could be translated? Leap for joy. So imagine a football fan. I haven't checked the scores today. There's lots of sad faces around me, Liverpool fans and all sorts. So maybe you haven't been doing this much recently. But when a football team scores last minute, the winner, you're jumping for joy, ecstatic. That is the description here. Isn't that shocking? I think we need to capture the shock of this. So let's try and get our heads around this. Imagine Peter being crucified upside down and the nails are going through his hands. And what's Jesus' word to him? Rejoice and be glad. Leap for joy. Or Paul, all the sufferings, being stoned to the point where they thought he was dead. The word for him here is rejoice, be glad, leap for joy that that's happening to you. Leap. Asif being drowned by his dad in a swimming pool. The words here for him are, blessed are you that that happened to you. Are you capturing the shock of it? These verses are quite hard to get your head around naturally, which is why I try to avoid preaching this sermon. It's quite hard to even, who am I to be speaking on this? This is supernatural. Can you explain it? I would argue this is probably some of the most shocking verses in the Bible. There's many, but this would be maybe the ones that should catch our breath when we read it. And the thing is here that it is true. By that I mean that it did actually happen. What was Paul doing when he was imprisoned? Singing. I read of a Romanian man in jail for being a Christian. And he was tortured so brutally that chunks were ripped out of his skin, his flesh. Sorry to be gory. He was in solitary confinement in ridiculous conditions. And he describes his experience. And he said there were times when he was leaping for joy in his cell, praising Jesus. How do you explain this? Then there's Christians who are about to be burnt at the stake, right? And they're kissing it. Everyone sees Christians kissing the instrument that's going to kill them. And then there's some that are whipped brutally, and they describe those whips as roses. Oh, you whipped me with roses. What's going on here? Is this play acting? Is this Christians play acting? Is this real? Surely this is a joy that the world can't find. I'm talking about a happiness here. This is how it relates to you. You might be sitting there thinking, I'm not a Christian, this has nothing to say to me. What we're talking about here is a happiness that stays with you and only grows in the darkest of times. Isn't that what the world is searching for? In this uncertain world where anything can happen at any moment, that's what the Christian has. So how? Is it just positive thinking? Are they somehow enjoying the pain? No. It's not positive thinking, which is convincing yourself of something that is not true, but you're trying to convince yourself that it is true. I did that in a mirror. I think I've shared this before. Before I was a Christian, I was trying to find joy. And I was advised by a book that if you really want to be happy, you look in the mirror and you tell yourself things that you wish were true. And you just keep saying it in the mirror and it will become true. So I did that. And I just felt like an idiot. I was saying, you're strong, you're brave. No, I'm not. You're handsome. This isn't that. So there's a reason why the Christian is happy here. And it's the second point. We need to look at the Christian's hope. They have hope here. That's the key. The happiness is dependent on something. Did you spot the hope in these verses? Verse 10. For, that's the reason, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's the secret. What's hope? Hope is looking forward to something ahead that changes my present. I'm looking forward to something that's ahead, so I'm happy and joyful in the present, right? That's hope. But often the things we hope in today let us down. I wonder what you've hoped in life and your hopes have been crushed. It might have been a relationship, a family member, money, career, I don't know. Maybe it hasn't let you down yet, but one day it will. In fact, the one thing certain is death, which will crush all hope. So the Christian has a unique hope here because in this darkest place, their hope is still there. What's their hope? Heaven. 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 The place we were made for. The place where God lives. The place where there is life, love, joy, peace forever. No more death, no more suffering, no more tears. A place that is eternal, it cannot be taken away, you can't lose it. A place that is certain because Christ died for the sins that should have kept me out of there and then rose from the dead. And I look at the resurrection, I think, wow, okay, if he's risen, if I trust in him, I'm going to be risen one day and spend eternity with him. So there's this certainty, do you see? Eternal, certain. And the beauty is that the hope remains even here in the darkest place. That's the beautiful thing about the Christian. The world has tried to take everything from them, but they can't get this. The world could take your money, your health. They could hit you down. They could even kill you. And this hope remained. Because you're going to be in glory. All they've essentially done, if someone was going to kill you for your faith, all they've essentially done is speed you to the very destination you were hoping for. We're talking about this indestructible hope. What's the best way I can show you this? A man called Chrysostom. I don't know if you've heard of him. A great Christian of ancient times. And he was summoned before the Roman emperor. Listen to the conversation that happened. The Roman emperor was going to banish him. Listen to what Chrysostom replies. Sire, you cannot banish me, for the world is my father's house. So the emperor says, then I'll slay you. Nay, this is old language. Nay, but you cannot, for my life is hid with Christ in God. Then the emperor says, okay, your treasures will be confiscated then. Sire, that cannot be. My treasures are in heaven, where none can break through and steal. Then the emperor says, okay, I will drive you from men and you will have no friends left. Chrysostom says, that you cannot do either, for I have a friend in heaven who has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Isn't this the wonder of a Christian? Who can destroy their hope? If this is true, everything that he says. But note this, it didn't just remain in the dark place, it grew in the dark place. Did you notice this? I won't spend too long here, but there's an argument in verse 10 to 12 that the Christian's hope has only grown in two ways. Firstly, their assurance has grown. What do I mean by that? Well, Jesus says, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. He's saying, this persecution that's happening to you is only proving to you that you are heaven's. Do you see? You're just like the prophets. Would you ever doubt Isaiah's salvation? You cannot doubt the persecuted Christian's salvation according to this logic. What's the reason? Well, think about it. The Christian has left the world, a world that hates God, a world that hates Jesus. We said that last time. So every time the world is attacking the Christian, it's almost like further confirmation, I am a Christian. How we need that? We doubt our salvation often, do we? Persecution is a sure way to be certain of where you're going. I'm not saying we look for it, but that's one of the benefits that come through it. But there's another one. Did you notice Jesus said, great is your reward in heaven? Your reward is great in heaven. What's this teaching? Maybe we get uncomfortable when we hear the word reward. Is this Islam? Are we teaching that you kill yourself and then that speeds you to heaven? The martyrs get it. No. We've already said that to get into heaven is by grace, paid for by Christ, trust in him. But we cannot get away from the teaching that there is rewards for those who are in heaven already. Jesus teaches it all through this sermon, that word reward. And I think it's a beautiful teaching rather than be afraid of it, because it's saying something very important. It's teaching us some sort of maths. I'm looking at Bradley. Whatever you may lose in this life for Christ will only add to your gain in the next. Does that make sense? So nothing is wasted. Your suffering here is not wasted. God takes that into account in eternity. He cares about your suffering. It's not wasted. We could spend so much longer here, but I'm speeding through just to show you that persecution only ends up working for the good of the Christian. You could argue, according to this, they're better off eternally than before it happened, if we believe in these words. It's shocking stuff. But the heart of it here is this: their hope is in heaven. This will only make sense to you if your hope is in heaven too. That's the key, the center of the Christian faith, the hope of heaven. Now, thirdly, we're not finished yet, because we're still missing something here. Heaven is not the ultimate reason for why the Christian has chosen to face all of this. What is it? Well, thirdly, the Christian's treasure. Did you notice verse 11? Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. He doesn't say on heaven's account. They're not doing it for heaven's sake. They're doing it because of Jesus. He is their reward. He's the reason they're going through all of this. So if you really want to understand why a Christian does what they do, we must look at Jesus. He's the reason they've chosen to endure all of this. Who is Jesus? The Bible tells us he's God as a man. Everything you know about God is true about him. Eternal, full of mercy, full of grace, full of truth, full of wisdom. He's the Prince of Peace. I could go on. He's the bread of life. He gives life. You could say he's the center of heaven in the Bible. He's the glory of heaven, which we sung earlier. He's the one who makes heaven, heaven. He's the reason why there's no suffering in heaven. He's there. He's the reason why there's no death. And he's the one who got us in. He loved us so much. He laid down his life for me, for you. He's the treasure. Knowing him. And doesn't that change everything? Because it means that the Christian is not simply living for a cause. Many people are suffering today for causes. Many people are suffering today for paradise. Why did the person of a certain religion speed their own death? They hoped of a certain paradise, didn't they? This is different. It's a person that the Christian is living for. Yes, they're going to heaven, but he's the glory. He's the center of heaven. He's worthy of my life, surely then. He loves me. He gave all for me. So surely, when you think of it like this, it's an honor to suffer for him. It changes the whole dynamic of persecution. To be counted with him, the one who laid his life for me. But knowing this also adds another dynamic, the fact that we're dealing with a person here. This is a beautiful truth. It means the Christian has this treasure now because Christ is with them now. They taste heaven now. His spirit lives in them. So you could say that even in the darkest times, they're not alone. You could say they have a mini experience of heaven even in the darkest times. And the best way I can tell you about this is John Payton, which I have quoted before. Listen to his, I'll tell you briefly, he's a missionary to an island of cannibals. And there was a moment where his wife has already died by this point because of the trip. He's up a tree with cannibals at the foot of the tree waiting to eat him when he comes down. Can you think of a much darker time in life? Listen to what he wrote in his diary about that night. And this will capture what I'm trying to say. He says, I sat among the branches as safe in the arms of Jesus. Never in all my sorrows did the Lord draw near to me and speak so soothingly to my soul. I'll skip some of his descriptions here because he uses some really nice descriptions. But due to time, he says, alone yet not alone. If it be to glorify my God, I will not grudge to spend many nights alone in such a tree, to feel again my Saviour's spiritual presence, to enjoy his consoling fellowship. Think about this. You know what he's just said there? I'd love to go up that tree again with those cannibals at the foot if it meant being close to Christ again. He tasted heaven. The darkest moment became arguably the brightest. Are you seeing what we're saying here? I asked at the beginning, who would be a Christian? Surely, if you're getting this, the real question is, who would not be a Christian? Even if it means that, even if it means the worst case scenario, how could you turn this away? Yes, we're not playing light with this. Christianity is not easy. Christians are suffering hugely today across the world and in history. It could be one of the hardest journeys you take in life. But it is more than worth it, is what we're being told here. So let's go back to our story of Jimmy. Remember what he was doing. He was being beaten up every day, lunch getting stolen, and he was only making it worse by wearing the badge and spreading the news about his future college to his classmates that hated that college. His story only makes sense if the college ahead that he was going to was better than his present situation. That's the only way his story makes sense. More, it only makes sense if the beatings themselves that he was getting were not for nothing. That wearing the badge and promoting his future college affected his future in that college. Do you see? If the beatings were for nothing, why would he go around wearing the badge and proclaiming about his college? The point is this, his story only makes sense if you consider where he was going. And that's the point here. I have struggled to preach this. I wanted to change this because I find these truths very hard. It's the opposite to what we naturally think. And I don't feel even that I'm qualified to speak on such topics based on what I've experienced. But thankfully, it doesn't depend on that. This is about a willingness to be persecuted. So that's the question we're dealing with tonight. And I hope the main point is clear. The main point is no one wants persecution. No one could rejoice in persecution in itself. It's horrible. But someone can face it and rejoice in it if the thing that they are being persecuted for is much better than any present thing they can lose. Friends, etc. Also, they can rejoice in it if somehow the persecution itself was doing something that affected their future enjoyment. That's the point tonight, which is why we can say, this is quite a shocking statement, a persecuted Christian is better off eternally than one who isn't. Seems to be what Jesus is saying here. Do you see that as we bring this series to a close and we've been asking, what is a Christian? This is the clearest picture of one. Why is it the clearest picture of a Christian? Because it tells you what they're all about. They've lost everything. Just picture this description. They've been reviled, persecuted, lied about. They're by themselves. They've got nothing. They may be in prison, languishing. And what are they doing? Rejoicing. That is a Christian. If you want to know what a Christian is, and why? Because they have Christ. That's a Christian. They've got nothing else, but they've got him, so they can rejoice. And what does it tell you as you look? Jesus is better than anything else this world offers. That's what it tells you. And it's been proven in their life because they've lost everything and they're still rejoicing. So as we apply this, because we have to apply this because Jesus says you, he wants us to think about it personally from verse 11. To some, these are words of comfort. If there's some here tonight who are Christians who are suffering right now for the cause of Christ, maybe it's at work, maybe it's in family, you've took a stand, you've maybe broken up with it from a relationship because of Jesus, I don't know what you've gone through, but these words are saying to you, don't give up. Blessed are you, in fact, and rejoice. Don't just bear it and grin and just grit your teeth and just think about walking out. Jesus says, rejoice. Look at where you're going. Oh, it's hard. He says, I know it's hard, but look at the heaven where you're going. So these are words of comfort. But for others here, these words are a challenge. Maybe some of you are sitting here and the reason why you haven't followed Christ yet, you're not a Christian, is because of the cost. You know it's going to change your life. You know you're going to, maybe you're worried about what your friends are going to say, what your family's going to say. Or there's some Christians here and we have cleverly navigated our life to avoid any sort of persecution whatsoever. I'm a Christian, yes, but I never tell anyone, and I'm living in this kind of secret life, and I don't say anything to anyone, and life is great. These words speak to us, which is ironically why we read Salt and Light, the verse 13 to 16. Jesus is talking about living an open life, not hiding under a basket. Well, these words are saying, if that's you and you're shying away from this life of kind of suffering and at any cost, then it's simply saying your hope is in the wrong place. That's what it's saying. Your hope is here. And as long as your hope is here, you will avoid any sort of suffering for Christ. But if your hope is lifted out of here and placed in the place where you're going, Christian, or where you could be going, those of you who are not yet, your response and attitude to life will change. And you won't go out looking for persecution. This isn't a call to go out and just be persecuted so you can get a great reward. That's not the point here. It's surrendering so that whatever comes, I take. Well, finally, what if you're like me and you know this should be you and you want it to be you? You'd love the joy of living for Jesus no matter the cost. You love that, all out for Christ, but it feels too much and you're afraid and you're scared and you can say, I could never do that. These martyrs, these Christians, these bold preachers, and I'd love to do that. I just can't, it's too much. Well, you're right, it is too much. These persecuted Christians were not superhumans. They were ordinary people. These disciples were fishermen. Peter denies Jesus 3 times after this. All the disciples run away when he goes to the cross. But somehow they end up preaching all the way to their death for this. What do you do? What did they do? Well, we end this series where we began. We began in Matthew chapter 4, where the whole journey began for them. Well, how did it begin? Jesus said to them, follow me. Follow me. They did. They left everything. They followed him. Everything flowed from there. He changed them. He saved them. He won their hearts. He gave faith. He made them brave. He gave them his spirit. And he led them all the way to glory. But it began with one step of faith. The rest came after. The Beatitudes came after. So tonight, the call is, take that one step. You may not, at this moment, think, I can't ever go there. I can't ever see me doing anything big like that, like I'm reading here. But can you take one step and leave everything that's in the way right now and say, Jesus, I know you're better than this. I'm going to choose you for the next step, and then the next step, and then the next step. That's the call tonight. Whether it's for your first time or the 100th time, Jesus is waiting with arms open, saying, come to me as you are, and I will lead you the rest of the way. And if the way gets hard, I will be with you even more. You never have to fear. I'll never forsake you. And you're heading to glory. So that's the call tonight. And I'm just going to end with a quote from William Carey, a well-known quote. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose.